And welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, May 5th, 2020. I'm your reader, Nancy, and here's our first story. Aggressive testing plan devised. Dubuque County will test residents, staff of long-term care facilities for COVID-19 throughout this week, written by Benjamin Fisher. About 1,000 selected Dubuque County residents, mainly residents of long-term care facilities, will be tested this week for COVID-19. The targeted testing is not open to the public, local officials announced Monday. Those tested will all be residents and staff of long-term care facilities and, quote, individuals identified through contact tracing as having possible exposure to positive COVID-19 patients in Dubuque County, close quote. This is according to the Dubuque County COVID-19 Incident Command Team. The testing will be done at no cost to those tested. It will be done on Wednesday through Friday of this week under the direction of the State Health Department and easily constitutes the biggest wave of testing in the county. As of Monday, 1,559 tests have been administered in the county, resulting in 152 confirmed cases. It's going to be a very aggressive testing 3 days, said County Public Health Director Patrice Lambert during a joint meeting of the County Board of Supervisors and Board of Health. Lambert said she was hesitant to disclose where in the county the testing would occur to avoid a rush on the tests. According to County Emergency Management Director Tom Berger, county staff is working with local law enforcement to plan security for the sites. Testing will be conducted through LabCorp, an international private laboratory company with locations in state, which will have staff in Dubuque County to oversee the process. Last Tuesday, the first outbreak at a long-term care facility in Dubuque County was reported, prompting local officials to ramp up efforts for the testing. The operators of Dubuque Specialty Care confirmed that 3 residents and 1 employee tested positive for the coronavirus. According to the most recent state data, the number of cases at the facility still stood at 4 as of Sunday. The county's COVID-19 Incident Command Team was able to arrange for all residents and staff of that facility to be tested late last week. Those kits were donated by United Clinical Laboratories of Dubuque. But, according to Lambert, no results have been received yet because the completed kits were sent to the State Hygienic Lab at the University of Iowa in Iowa City, where there is a 5-day backlog. While local officials are pleased to have the testing drive this week, it is not everything they had hoped for. Even before last week's local outbreak, Lambert had requested that a state COVID-19 strike team be deployed to Dubuque County. Local officials then requested a Test Iowa testing site be set up in Dubuque County and, in lieu of that local care providers be able to test and send collected samples to a Test Iowa site. We were denied the request to have a Test Iowa site and denied the authority to test those individuals who were qualified via the online assessment, Lambert said. Quote, so, this is not the full request we asked for, but if we can focus on these 1,000 people, at least we are doing something. Close quote. She emphasized that this is a, quote, standalone program for Dubuque County, not associated with Test Iowa or the state strike teams, close quote. The Iowa Department of Public Health will be paying for the tests and lab fees. She said LabCorp estimates a 48-hour to 72-hour wait for test results. County Supervisor Ann McDonough requested a report from Lambert on the county's capability of providing isolation space in the event of a sharp uptick in confirmed cases. If we're getting 1,000 test kits, given contact tracing, I would expect our numbers of positive tests and possibly needing isolation will be greatly enhanced over the next week, McDonough said. I would like to know what that looks like and how prepared we are. Lambert said she would provide a written update on those preparations for the supervisors' meeting on Wednesday, May 6. The Board of Health also voted unanimously to purchase 1,800 testing collection kits from United Clinical Laboratories. The figure is 10% of the 18,000 kits that UCL reported having on hand. The stock would be held and used in an event like the outbreak at Dubuque Specialty Care, so local officials will not have to wait for outside resources to begin testing. Lambert pointed out that the Board of Health does not have a claim on UCL's collection kits. County Supervisor Jay Wickham encouraged the Board of Health's actions. Quote, "I understand they're a private company," he said, "but the Board of Health and Board of Supervisors are public entities. We're responsible for the well-being of the county. What would be wrong with placing an order for a certain number just to have?" Close quote. The Board of Health voted to approach UCL first, but to not stop there if the local purchase was unsuccessful. Members wanted to be sure that the kits they get are compatible with processes at Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, as that renowned facility does not share the state of Iowa's requirements for testing. "They are saying they will test anything that's sent to them," board member Diane Pape Freiberger said. Board members did not put a cost limit on the purchase, but acknowledged that they have not used much of the $500,000 allocated to them by the county supervisors for costs related to the COVID-19 pandemic. Officials said they did not have estimated costs for the kits. In other COVID-19 articles, a surge in COVID-19 cases in two counties. Dubuque County ties a one-day high. Grant County, Wisconsin reports another death. National Guard conducts testing at Platteville and Prairie du Chien businesses. This was compiled by various Telegraph Herald staff members. Both Dubuque County and Grant County, Wisconsin saw surges again Monday in the number of COVID-19 cases confirmed, and the latter also reported another related death. Meanwhile, the Wisconsin National Guard was involved in a large-scale testing effort Monday in Platteville and will conduct another today in Prairie du Chien. In Iowa, Dubuque County tied a recently set single-day record Monday when 16 more confirmed cases of COVID-19 were reported. The same number also was reported on Saturday. On Sunday, 11 cases were announced. Dubuque County's total now stands, as of this writing, at 152, along with 5 related deaths. In Delaware County, local officials reported 2 more cases were confirmed, pushing that county's total to 7. On Sunday, the state announced 1 more case in Jackson County, pushing its total to 6, but on Monday, county officials said the total actually remains at 5. The state, on Monday, also reported 17 cases in Clayton County, but county officials said the total was actually 18. With no new cases, Jones County remained at 24. Statewide, there were 534 more cases announced on Monday, and the state's total now stands at 9,703. 4 more deaths were reported, pushing that total to 188. In Wisconsin, 6 more confirmed cases of COVID-19 were reported on Monday in Grant County, along with an additional death. The county's totals now are 54 cases, along with 7 related deaths. Meanwhile, all of the staff of Platteville manufacturing facility HiPro Incorporated and their families were tested Monday after multiple employees were confirmed to have the coronavirus. The testing was overseen by the National Guard and the County Health Department and Emergency Management. County health officials said they did not know how many tests were conducted. They said fewer than 5 employees initially tested positive. Since the first cases were confirmed on April 26, the plant closed and its disinfection was completed April 28. Operations are scheduled to resume on Monday, May 11. County officials on Monday also would not release an updated COVID-19 case count from an outbreak at the county-owned Orchard Manor in Lancaster. Officials last reported figures, which were from last Tuesday, at which time 8 staff and 19 residents had tested positive. In Crawford County, the Wisconsin National Guard will help test 350 employees of Prairie Industries, and that will occur today. At least 4 employees have tested positive for COVID-19, and all the company's locations in Prairie du Chien have shut down temporarily. As of Monday, 7 confirmed cases of COVID-19 had been reported in Crawford County, although at least 2 of the Prairie Industries employees with the coronavirus live outside of the county. No new cases were reported Monday in Lafayette County, which has 6 cases, or in Iowa County, which has 7. Statewide, 272 new cases were reported on Monday, with the state totals now standing at 8,236. One additional death was reported, so the state's toll for that figure is now 340. In Illinois, one more confirmed case was reported Monday in Joe Davies County, pushing that county's total to 14. Statewide, 2,341 new cases were reported, along with 46 additional fatalities. The state totals now stand at 63,840 cases, 2,662 deaths in 97 counties. And in another article related to COVID-19 in Wisconsin, all Wisconsin nursing home residents to get tested. Governor Evers announced his plan to expand testing for COVID-19 as a part of a phased reopening of the state. This was reported by the Associated Press out of Madison, Wisconsin. Every resident and worker in all 373 Wisconsin nursing homes will receive a free coronavirus test as part of a plan to expand testing to everyone who needs one, Governor Tony Evers announced on Monday. Evers announced the expanded testing ahead of his first meeting with Republican and Democratic legislative leaders to discuss the next steps in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, as pressure builds to move rapidly to reopen the state's economy despite the continued spread of the disease. Evers said state health officials started contacting nursing homes on Monday to coordinate supplies in advance of testing more than 10,000 residents and staff each week. Nursing homes in Wisconsin and nationally have been hotspots for outbreaks of COVID-19. As of last Wednesday, there were 93 public health investigations in long-term care facilities in Wisconsin, with 25 facilities having more than 5 confirmed cases, the state health department said. Other steps Evers announced to expand testing include using the National Guard and local health agencies to test workers and families associated with outbreaks at businesses, increasing from 10 to 25 the number of National Guard units to help with setting up testing sites to respond to outbreaks, and increasing free drive-through testing sites at communities throughout the state. As of Monday, more than 8,200 people tested positive for COVID-19 in Wisconsin, and 340 people have died, according to the State Department of Health Services. The actual number of infections is thought to be far higher, though, because many people have not been tested, and studies suggest that people can be infected without feeling sick. Turning now to other news, here's another article from today's front page of the Telegraph Herald. City Council unanimously supports Van Milligan. Despite derogatory statements towards some of his peers on social media, Brett Shaw votes in lockstep. This was written by Thomas J. Barton of the Telegraph Herald staff. Dubuque County City Council members on Monday voted unanimously for a resolution declaring that City Manager Mike Van Milligan's job was safe and praised his work in the role. All evidence that I see in the large majority of the Dubuque community points to the fact that we have the right city manager to lead Dubuque right now, said Councilmember Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Shaw was among those who voted in favor of the resolution. Last summer, Shaw and 3 other then-council members pushed to fire Van Milligan, and on Saturday, he posted on Facebook about the resolution saying, quote, "Some people like being led by the nose but are too proud to admit it," close quote, before calling out 2 fellow council members, David Resnick and Rick Jones, for comments they made regarding the city manager. But he did not comment on his vote during Monday night's meeting, and he did not immediately return a message seeking comment afterwards. Last summer, Shaw and now former council members Luis Del Toro, Kate Larson, and Jake Rios leveled accusations against Van Milligan that included claims of misleading council members and a loss of talented female and racially diverse staff due to serious cultural problems that led to a hostile workplace at City Hall. Resnick told the Telegraph Herald last week, in part, that Van Milligan was, quote, a victim of unethical behavior, while Jones labeled the accusations against the city manager fabrication and garbage, close quote. Del Toro pushed back against those comments Monday in an email to council members asking that they reconsider the resolution. In his email, Del Toro referenced a lawsuit filed last summer against the city by a female police captain, claiming gender discrimination, harassment, and retaliation. She retired in January and told the TH that her departure was prompted by council members' refusal to hold accountable Van Milligan and Police Chief Mark Dalsing. Quote, many times upper leadership may not be directly responsible for shortcomings, but as the leaders of organizations, they bear responsibility just as would any individual under their direction for the outcomes and also any issues that may or may have existed under their watch, close quote, Del Toro wrote. No one is taking anything away from the city manager and his role in prior city successes detailed in this resolution. But you also can't turn a blind eye to organizational concerns because of prior contributions. Del Toro, too, argued the resolution sends the wrong message to city staff who have or are experiencing workplace harassment and discrimination. To me, this sends the message that we don't believe you, he wrote. But current council members on Monday night praised Van Milligan for operating a lean and efficient organization and deftly guiding the city through several crises, including economic downturns, natural disasters, and the current COVID-19 pandemic. The resolution, which was read by Mayor Roy Buell, talked about how Dubuque has achieved international recognition for efforts to become a viable, livable, and equitable community during Van Milligan's tenure. It praised the seasoned and highly competent leadership of City Manager Mike Van Milligan, the people in place within the city organization, and the existence of the partnerships that have been nurtured over the years, saying they are key to the community's ability to operate efficiently and effectively on a routine basis and during times of extreme stress, as occurs during disasters, with the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic as a perfect example. In all of his dealings with the city manager, Resnick said Van Milligan has always acted with honesty, professionalism, and integrity. Jones added, it's about the places we are today, the places we're trying to get. This isn't about throwing rocks against anyone from the past. Laura Roussel, who joined the council in January, said she has been impressed with the diverse team Mike has built, their expertise, their enthusiasm, and the way they work together. She added that Van Milligan has built a well-known and well-earned reputation across the state as a high-caliber city manager. And in the final story from today's front page, local brewers craft sales strategies. With tap rooms closed, beer makers search for creative ways to move their products. By Jeff Montgomery. When Dimensional Brewing Company opened its doors in 2018, its owners envisioned a crowded tap room with flowing beer and lively conversation. The current state of affairs at the Dubuque Brewery looks far different. Customers enter the tap room through a side door and approach an empty bar, where Dimensional's remaining workers serve beer to go in large cans known as crowlers. Co-owner Tom Ruin is trying to find a silver lining. He noted that Dimensional recently delivered its beer to the Quad Cities and also Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, and Waterloo to fulfill orders customers have made online. Newly formed partnerships have enabled Dimensional to begin offering beers from breweries in markets such as Des Moines and Sioux City, Iowa. This is a time when you can take the traditional rules and throw them out the window, Ruin said. Everyone has a clean slate to rethink and reimagine how you do business and interact with customers. It's kind of fun getting to do that. For the most part, however, operating a brewery during the COVID-19 pandemic is anything but fun. Most breweries have seen on-site sales decline by more than 70%, according to a recent report by the Brewers Association. The nonprofit trade association also found that more than 66% of brewery staff have been laid off or furloughed. Small independent breweries, which lean more heavily on taproom sales than their larger counterparts, have been hit particularly hard by the pandemic. It's a tough pill to swallow for many in the tri-states. Tom and Carol Olberding opened textile brewing company in Dyersville, Iowa last summer and quickly developed a loyal following. The pandemic has slowed their momentum and significantly affected sales. We were rolling along until this happened, Tom said. The most frustrating part is how much of this is still up in the air. Breweries have attempted to generate revenue by shifting business models, but the process has often proven costly and complicated. Olberding said Textile established an online ordering system for food and beer. The Olberdings also purchased a cooler and a can seamer to package their brews and make them available on a to-go basis. We have spent a significant amount of money to turn ourselves into a takeout facility, he said. Brewing operations have continued amid the health crisis. Olberding said the brewer's goal is to come out with a new beer each week, emphasizing that this will encourage customers to come back regularly. We know it is critical to keep people interested in our beer and our business, he said. Some local brewers have taken to social media to keep customers engaged. River Ridge Brewing in Bellevue, Iowa, celebrated the release of a new beer, Pink Denim, with a music video in which staff members sampled the new creation. The clip has been viewed more than 1,200 times on Facebook since it was posted a couple of weeks ago. The brewery's owners also offered a virtual tour of their new Riverside location, which is slated to open in the summer. Customers could comment or ask questions in real time while viewing the tour on Facebook. Better days ahead? Evolving industry dynamics have resulted in shortage of key supplies. Ruin of Dimensional Brewing said there is a shortage of the glassware that's used to make growlers, the 64-ounce containers that allow customers to purchase beer from the brewery and take it home. Crowlers also are difficult to procure. The beer-to-go model might not be built to last anyway, according to the Brewers Association. Only 40% of breweries said they could sustain current business operations if social distancing practices remain in place for 3 months or longer. Only 15% could remain open if restrictions lasted 6 months or more. At first, the owners of Jubeck New World Brewing Company in Dubuque weren't overly concerned about generating revenue during the mandated shutdown. Instead, the staff spent the first couple of weeks refinishing the hardwood floors and carrying out other facility improvements. Realizing the shutdown would be longer than first expected, the brewery recently started to can their beers and sell them on Fridays and Saturdays. Over the past 3 weekends, the to-go beer offering has produced solid, if not spectacular, sales. It also has given co-owner Jay Jubeck a chance to reunite with local patrons, many of whom don protective face masks during their visits. I don't recognize everybody right away because of the mask, Jubeck said, but it's great to see them, and they seem happy to be coming in. Even so, he acknowledged that the new normal is no replacement for the way it used to be. I can't wait until our customers can sit at the bar and we can have a conversation again, he said. In some shorter items here, from Manchester, Iowa, the Farmers Market to open May 23rd. Manchester's Farmers Market will open May 23rd with some restrictions related to the coronavirus pandemic. Vendors will be allowed to sell only farm products and food. Live entertainment and common seating will be prohibited, and social distancing requirements will be followed. The market is held from 7:30 to 11 a.m. on Saturdays along River Street in Manchester. Also in Galena, Farmers Market to open in June. Galena Farmers Market will open for the season next month. Organizers recently announced that the first iteration will be held on June 6. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, social distancing practices will be mandated for the market participants. Additionally, vendors will be required to wear gloves and face masks and to establish hand-washing stations. Vendors will be restricted to those that are deemed, quote, essential under the state's shelter-in-place order. And from Platteville, business owners asked to take COVID-19 economic impact survey. Platteville economic development leaders are seeking feedback from business owners as the community copes with economic shutdowns stemming from the COVID-19 pandemic. The information will guide planning with respect to the pursuit of financial opportunities, education, and training, according to a press release. The survey must be completed by Friday, May 8. To do so, you can visit www.bit.ly/2xpcA6. And we have two letters to the editor today. The headline for the first reads, Media Not Fair to Trump on COVID, submitted by Bert Goffinette, Victoria Street, Dubuque. A recent article in the TH about Democrats hoping to retake the Senate caught my ire. It stated that the president stumbled addressing the COVID crisis. A couple of liberal journalists seemed to just throw that in their column without any justification or fact. Anyone with a little common sense would understand that President Trump, Dr. Fauci, and Dr. Birx are not perfect. But I can imagine if the Dems had been in control, they would still be evaluating sex and gender quotas for their panels. Mr. Biden was able to get one coherent sentence together by calling Trump a racist for halting travel from China. I wonder how much worse things would have gotten if Joe was in control. On another matter, the complete hypocrisy by the Dems and press concerning sexual assault charges against Biden and those against Justice Brett Kavanaugh are glaring. Will the anti-Trump media ever get around to questioning Joe? Where have all the journalists gone? Depends on if you have an R or a D behind your name. In the second letter, COVID-19 does govern our lives. This letter was submitted by Sherry Flatt, Clifford Street, Dubuque. A Governor Kim Reynolds quote, we must learn to live with COVID-19 virus activity without letting it govern our lives, close quote. Governor Reynolds has it backwards. We must learn that coronavirus does govern our lives and respond accordingly to protect our citizens. Our government is what is in place to do this. We elected people to do this job. The government must rely on the advice of expert scientists to make their decisions. The business world must be following the advice that scientists are giving to the government. We may not like it, but that's how our society is designed. Laws function through that design. Our lives depend on this working, not putting the profits of companies in charge of making decisions. The meatpacking industry has to change and function in a manner that protects its workers. It will take big changes, but can and must be done. We should not see workers' lives as expendable to keep an industry functioning. And now is the time for these changes to quickly begin. Yes, the food chain depends on it, but more importantly, so do our lives. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, May 5, 2020. You're listening on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now let's turn to today's obituaries. Rita Putman, Bellevue, Iowa. Rita Rees Putman, age 67 of Bellevue, passed away on Friday, May 1, 2020 at her home, surrounded by her loving family. Due to COVID-19 and limitations on social gatherings, a celebration of life will be held at a later date. Local arrangements are entrusted to Hackman Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Bellevue. Rita was born September 7, 1952, the daughter of Melvin, Doc, and Kathleen, Katie, Rubel Rees. She married Stephen C. Putman on June 16, 1973, and he passed on February 12, 2017. Rita worked at Flex Steel for 34 years and then 10 years at Bellevue Community Schools. She also enjoyed working at Horizon Lanes for many years. Rita was devoted to her children and grandchildren and enjoyed attending all their activities. She also enjoyed gardening, bowling, playing cards with friends and family, and watching Iowa Hawkeye sports. One of Rita's true loves was going with her late husband Steve to the Dubuque casinos for an afternoon of fun. Rita was a hard worker, a great athlete in her younger years, and always had to stay busy. She was known for her infectious smile that seemed to brighten the day of all. A person that never once complained about any hardships, but instead would go out of her way to help others. She was also one that encouraged all to do their best, work hard, and to enjoy each day to the fullest. Rita was truly the cornerstone of the family and made sure that her children were raised with love, along with supporting them in all their activities. Years later, that same devotion and support would be carried over to her grandchildren. She will be truly missed by all who knew and loved her. Thoughts and condolences may be sent to Hackman Funeral Home, care of Rita Pittman Family, at 100 North 6th Street, Bellevue, Iowa, 52031. The family encourages all memorials to be directed to the Hospice of Jackson County in Rita's memory. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.hachmannfuneralhome.com. Linda A. Reynolds, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Linda Ann Reynolds, age 81, of Lancaster, Wisconsin, passed away on Sunday, May 3, 2020, at Orchard Manor Nursing Home of rural Lancaster from complications due to a stroke. She was born July 1, 1938, in Glenhaven Township, the daughter of Martin and Helen Hockhusen Felder. Linda graduated from St. Mary's Grade School in Glenhaven, Wisconsin. She was united in marriage to Edward P. Reynolds on June 18, 1955, at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Glenhaven. Ed preceded her in death on February 6, 1998. Linda was employed with Kroger Grocery Store, John's IGA, Dick's Supermarket, and the Piggly Wiggly, retiring in 2008. She looked forward to playing cards with the ladies in her apartment building. Linda enjoyed spending time with her children and grandchildren and their many travels. A celebration of Linda's life will be held at a future date, which will be announced. A private graveside service will be held on Wednesday, May 6, 2020, at St. Clement Cemetery in rural Lancaster, with Father William Vernon officiating. Cards of condolence in memory of Linda may be sent to Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory, Post Office Box 30, Lancaster, Wisconsin, 53813. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster is assisting the family. Online condolences may be left at www.martinschwartzfuneralhomes.com. Donald J. Stephan, Strawberry Point, Iowa. Donald James Stephan, age 78, of Strawberry Point, died on May 3, 2020. A burial will take place at St. Joseph's Cemetery in Earlville at a later date. And in births to announce today, on Friday, May 1, 2020, Andrew and Ashley LeGrain of Dubuque, a girl at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital in Dubuque. And on Sunday, May 3, 2020, Brigitte Stevens of Dubuque welcomed a boy also at Finley. And in high school sports, here are some capsule outlooks for what would have been the girls' high school golf season by Steve Ortman. Hopes of a girls' golf season were dashed last month when the Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union, in conjunction with the Iowa Department of Education and Iowa High School Athletic Association, canceled the spring sports season due to the coronavirus pandemic. Here's a look at how area teams in Iowa would have looked this season. Edgewood Colesburg. The coach is Alex Hanna. And the outlook? The Vikings were looking ahead to a promising season behind a deep 13-player roster led by the terrific Maddie Stryker. As a sophomore last spring, Stryker fired an 85-81 for 166 to finish fifth overall at the Class 1A state meet. With another year of experience, Stryker was poised to land in the top five again, if not make a run at a state championship. She'll be back and even hungrier to reach that level in 2021. And in Bellevue, the coach, Mark Rudin. And the outlook? The Comets were young last season and hoped to continue improving with another year of experience under their belts. Audrey Wiedeking was the top player returning, with Adrian Humphrey providing another solid scorer. Both will be back next year. And Bellevue Marquette, the coach, Jordan Albertson. The outlook. With three players on the roster, the Mohawks are small in numbers but big on potential. Beatrice Kemp reached the Class 1A regional final as a sophomore last spring, while Hannah Sieverding was just one stroke away from qualifying for the regional final. These Mohawks had expectations this season of competing for a state opportunity. And in Cascade, the coach, Jeff Morinum. And the outlook? The Cougars graduated two seniors from last season in Katie Mantonacht and Ava Morim, and a trio of juniors, Claire Nipper, Sam Frasher, and Emily Conlon, and they were posed to improve their scores and lead the way this year. Still young, the Cougars should be back and in good shape for next spring. And at Clayton Ridge, the coach, Scott Kelly. And the outlook for them? The Eagles were looking to regroup and unveil a fresh lineup this spring following the departure of Courtney Olson, one of the greatest players in program history, who qualified for state in all four seasons of her career, including three top five finishes. The Eagles were eager to prove themselves this season. And at Dyersville Beckman, the coach, Jim Sheston. And the outlook? After capturing the program's third state team championship in 2015, the Trailblazers have been in a stretch of rebuilding with youth. That trend was set to continue this spring with three upperclassmen and six sophomores. While Beckman will graduate one senior and Haley LeGrand, they're in a position to return most of their lineup for next year. And Makokada, the coach, Terry Taylor. And the outlook. The Cardinals are another young squad in the area looking for experience this spring, having graduated last year's leader, Carlene Paul, who tied for 35th at the state 3A state meet last season. Without a senior on the roster, Makokada will have everyone back next season. At Makokada Valley, the coach, Tim Andrews. And the outlook? The Wildcats placed 8th in the team standings at the Class 1A state meet last season, powered by five seniors in the lineup. The lone returner from that state squad, Erica Supple, would have been back to lead as a senior this spring. Supple finished 46th at state as a junior. And at West Delaware, the coach, Brett Mather. With three seniors and three juniors in the lineup, the Hawks were primed to display a veteran lineup this season. How the players improved as the year progressed would have been the deciding factor in regional success. In other news, supervisors consider $200,000 loan program for businesses. Three-year loans of up to $10,000 would be available to rural communities that are affected by the crisis. This was written by Benjamin Fisher of the Telegraph Herald reporting staff. The Dubuque County Board of Supervisors on Monday considered a $200,000 revolving loan fund for small businesses in rural communities affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. Three-year loans of up to $10,000 will be available. The first 6 months would be interest-free, while the interest rate would be 1% for the remainder. Elements of the program would mirror one offered by the nonprofit Dubuque Initiatives, according to Ed Raber, the County Board's interim executive director. However, the county program would be open to businesses outside of that city. There have been around 7 inquiries from businesses not within the city of Dubuque, he said. The loans could be used for general expenses such as payroll, leases, mortgages, utilities, inventory or supplies, machinery, equipment, or physical renovations, including those needed to meet social distancing guidelines. To qualify for the county program, businesses already must have applied for pandemic assistance programs through the state and federal government. Supervisor Jay Wickham said $200,000 should safely cover the needs in Greater Dubuque County. There are probably about a half dozen who've requested this, he said, and I'd anticipate another 10 at the most. I don't think we go past 20 in this specific program, but the demand is there for this type of loan. No vote was taken on the program, as Supervisor Dave Baker requested that it be reviewed by County Attorney C.J. May III. He also asked to hear from someone that the proposed program would serve. I would like to have someone who either was turned down or someone who is aware of businesses being turned down that are domiciled in Dubuque County, he said. I don't doubt those are there. I just want to hear it from the horse's mouth. Supervisor Ann McDonough requested that a sunset be added to the loan program. "We don't do well as a county, in my opinion, in ever closing things," she said. "I would like this to have an end date." The loan program would be administered by East Central Intergovernmental Association, as is the Dubuque Initiatives Program. It would charge a 3% fee for that administration, which comes to $6,000 if all $200,000 of the fund were used by businesses. The county supervisors are expected to again discuss the program during their meeting on Wednesday, May 6. And in Dubuque City Council, developments from the meeting held on Monday. COVID-19 relief funding. Action. Council members voted 7-0 to approve a recommendation to utilize nearly $650,000 in federal funding to support the community's planning, response, and recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. Background for this. City Council leaders in March signed off on reallocating $330,000 in federal funds to be set aside to put towards an emergency shelter to quarantine at-risk populations in Dubuque, if needed, and to provide temporary drive-through diagnostic testing. With the new federal funding, that money has been allocated back to rehab rental units, housing inspections, road work, and ash tree removal in the city's low-income neighborhoods. What's next? Funds received by the city will be used, in part, to help workers laid off due to the pandemic pay rent and utilities for up to 3 months, according to a city memo. Money also would be used to provide high-speed internet access to low-income households with students to support online learning. Also for a temporary shelter, if needed, to quarantine homeless people or families doubled up in a home, to provide grants to nonprofits providing assistance to those affected by the pandemic, and as funding of last resort for a drive-through COVID-19 diagnostic testing facility, among other uses. B. Branch Trail Action. Council members voted 7-0 to approve an agreement with the Iowa Department of Transportation for $420,000 in grant funding for construction of a trail along B. Branch Creek. Background. The city would also utilize $150,000 in sales tax funding for the estimated $525,000 project. The project involves extending the trail system construction as part of the Lower B Branch Creek Restoration Project to the south under U.S. 61-151 highways along the 16th Street Detention Basin shoreline to 12th Street, adjacent to the Alliant Energy Solar Array. The trail would then jog east towards Kerper Boulevard, according to city staff. What's next? Future improvements call for extending trail connections along the restored B Branch Creek to the Dubuque Heritage Trail, Mississippi River Trail, and the city's Intermodal Transportation Center on Elm Street. Julian Dubuque Drive Sewer Project. Action. Council members voted 7-0 to approve plans and estimated $222,592 cost to install a new sewer main along Julian Dubuque Drive. The background. Council members last year approved a memorandum of agreement with the Sisters of Charity, the Blessed Virgin Mary, and Presbyterian Homes and Services to extend sanitary sewer to serve the existing mother house and a new skilled nursing, assisted living, and memory care facility at the Mount Carmel campus. The agreement states that BVM-PHS will build private sewer from the facilities to Julian Dubuque Drive, and the city will extend public sewer from existing sewer serving Shady Oaks to the end of the private sewer. So the public sewer would be extended from the public sewer serving Shady Oaks to the end of the private sewer. And what's next for this project? City staff anticipate awarding a contract on May 18 with construction completed by the end of July. In area news and brief, Holy Family Schools appoints a new curriculum director. A Holy Family Catholic Schools assistant principal will become the system's next curriculum director. Lisa Kropfel, assistant principal at Wallert Catholic High School in Dubuque, will become Holy Family's new director of curriculum and assessment starting in the 2020-2021 school year, according to a press release. She fills a vacancy created when Todd Wessels resigned in March. Kropfel has been with Holy Family since 2010, when she started as a middle school science teacher. She also worked as an instructional coach and director of personalized learning before becoming an assistant principal at Wallert. Before coming to Holy Family, she worked for more than 15 years in K-12 and post-secondary education, the release states. Holy Family will immediately begin its search for Wallert's next assistant principal. And in Manchester, Iowa, Delaware County Community Chest is accepting requests. Delaware County Community Chest will accept requests for funding from nonprofit organizations through the end of May. Applications are available from the Delaware County Economic Development Office, located at 200 East Main Street in Manchester, or by visiting DelawareCountyIA.com. The Community Chest granted more than $13,000 to 13 local nonprofit organizations in 2019. From Dyersville, Iowa. Organizers Nick's Farm Toy Show in Dyersville. The COVID-19 pandemic has prompted the cancellation of another locally heavily attended event. Organizers announced that the 2020 Summer Farm Toy Show would not be held in Dyersville. The event had been slated for June 5 and 6. A press release notes that the show's host, the National Farm Toy Museum in Dyersville, remains closed as part of restrictions imposed by the state. Organizers said a virtual Summer Farm Toy Show will be held on June 6 on the event's Facebook page. The 2021 event tentatively is slated for June 26 and 27. From Manchester, Iowa, mobile food pantry event set for Thursday. A mobile food pantry event will be held at 5 p.m. Thursday, May 7, in the Don and Waltz parking lot, 1208 East Main Street in Manchester. Participants will be asked to remain in their vehicles during this drive-through event. Northeast Iowa Food Bank seeks to provide each participant household with one dry box, one frozen box, milk, eggs, and some fresh produce. And turning to news from Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Hazel Green flushing hydrants starting today. Village of Hazel Green employees will flush fire hydrants today through Thursday, May 7. In a message shared on social media on Monday, the village reminded residents that they should not do laundry on those days between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. Doing so could risk damage to those clothing items. From Dubuque, 200 residences in Dubuque are under a boil advisory after a water main break. A boil advisory was issued Monday night for about 200 residences near Gay Park in Dubuque. The declaration came in the wake of a water main break near the intersection of Muscatine and West 28th Streets that caused a lot of pressure in the water loss of pressure in the water distribution system. That raised the possibility of bacterial contamination, according to a city press release. A map of the affected area is available at thetelegraphherald.com. Crews were working to repair the water main on Monday night. After service is restored and the system is repressurized, bacteria samples will be collected and tested. Testing takes about 48 hours for confirmation, according to the city. City officials advise affected residents to bring water to a boil, let it boil for 1 minute, and let it cool before drinking or using it for ice, brushing teeth, or food preparation. Unboiled tap water can be used for bathing and other non-drinking purposes. For more information, you can contact the City of Dubuque Water Department at 563-589-4291 or visit www.cityofdubuque.org/water. And from Clayton County, Iowa. Clayton County Mining Company revives plant. A Clayton County sand mining company has revived its plans to export water to western states, in part to put its staff back to work, its lawyer noted. A downturn in the oil industry has been a blow to Patterson Sand Company of Clayton. Company lawyer James Prey of Des Moines wrote in a letter to Governor Kim Reynolds and Kayla Lyon, director of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Quote, until recent early reversals due to plunging demand due to oil price drops and the current coronavirus, Patterson Sand was one of the largest employers in northeast Iowa, employing nearly 300 people, close quote. lawyer James Prey wrote. In an effort to put employees back to work, Patterson Sand has been aggressively looking for new markets for its products that it owns on its property. Patterson has filed a new application in its effort to export millions of gallons of water from Iowa's Jordan Aquifer to drought-stricken states in the West. The company hopes to load 10 rail cars with Iowa water in June as a pilot program. Its earlier request to begin exporting Friday failed to win DNR approval in time. DNR regulators have balked at the plan, concerned that it violates the intent of Iowa's water withdrawal laws. This is the first water export proposal DNR has received, aside from small border rural water systems. Newly released documents show Patterson wants to export Iowa water in part to supply livestock and irrigate crops in Nevada and Colorado, state documents show. The water also could be treated and used for drinking or for commercial processes. Patterson revived its proposal after state regulators pushed back on the idea and demanded a new application because the use of the water would be different than in the sand mining operation. And from Joe Davies County, Illinois. Joe Davies County Mitigation Plan soon available for review. A recently completed plan detailing how Joe Davies County would respond to severe weather and other natural hazards can be viewed by the public beginning next week. The Joe Davies County Multi-Jurisdictional All-Hazards Mitigation Plan was put together by county officials. The plan outlines how the county would respond to various instances of severe weather or other hazards in order to minimize danger to residents and local infrastructure, along with projects that can further reduce harm prior to such events occurring, according to a press release. Residents can view it at joedaviescounty.org starting on May 13. Feedback can be submitted on the plan from May 13 to May 20. A public forum on the plan also will be held via teleconference at 2 p.m. on May 13. Those interested in attending should contact County Emergency Manager Charles Peterson at this phone number, 815-990-6702. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, May 5, 2020. I'm your reader, Nancy. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thanks for listening.